WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Any opinions expressed in this program are those of the host and do not represent the thoughts or opinions of 90.7 WVUA or the University of Alabama.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Season 1, Episode 5 of Pulse of the Nation, the podcast that brings you the hottest political news of the past week. I'm Braden Vick, your host, and today we'll be looking at some of the news that has gone on over the past week, including something that has just broken within the hour of recording. A right-wing radio host by the name of Larry Elder is going to announce that he is running for president today. He already has his campaign website up, already took a look at it, and the motto of his campaign is, well, because we have a country to save. Now, many of you may be asking, who is Larry Elder? Well, I'll tell you. He is from California, from the Los Angeles area, and he gained political notoriety for being the main Republican challenger to Governor Gavin Newsom when the recall election was happening a couple of years ago. I believe it was happening in 2021. Mr. Elder became the face of the Republican opposition to Governor Newsom and, you know, the recall election that ended up flopping for Republicans. I mean, Newsom won by over 25 points. You know, he ended up winning that by more than he won his 2022 re-election campaign. But now, that has happened within the hour. Add him to the 2% to Iowa caucus that has been growing, you know, along with your Perry Johnsons and, you know, your John Castros and whatnot. Like, he's not going to get far, I don't think. I mean, good Lord, if he wins the GOP presidential nomination, then I will record myself eating a sock and post it on the Pulse of the Nation Instagram account, which we've just launched, you know, within the past week for what it's worth. So go ahead, follow our Pulse of the Nation Instagram account, and if Larry Elder ever gets the GOP nomination in 2024, that is where I will post myself eating a sock. So now I know there's going to be a lot of people that follow that account just so that they hope that Larry Elder can win. But now on to the important news of the week, and this comes out of the United States Senate, where the Senate GOP has blocked Democrats from appointing a temporary successor to the judiciary seat of Senator Dianne Feinstein. The 89-year-old Democratic senator from California has been suffering from shingles over the past couple of months, and her ailing health means that she can't really be present in the Senate. Now, the unfortunate thing for Democrats is, now that the GOP has blocked a temporary successor from being appointed, is that Democrats need at least one GOP senator from the Judiciary Committee to consent to all of Biden's judicial nominations, otherwise they will die in committee. And that is quite the issue for Democrats, of course. Now, there's been a lot of condemnation of Senator Feinstein for not retiring earlier, sort of a similar, you know, similar language to what we saw after the death of longtime Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She was replaced by a conservative, and, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's legacy was said to almost be tarnished a little bit because she didn't strategically retire like, you know, Justice Anthony Kennedy and, you know, like, you know, Senator Thad Cochran, a Republican from Mississippi, you know, at the time. So some sort of similar accusations have been thrown out there. Senator Dianne Feinstein has been defended by, you know, women lawmakers who say that, you know, the push to get Senator Feinstein to resign is a sexist attack against her, when, you know, male lawmakers who were suffering the same situation, like, you know, Senator Strom Thurmond of South Carolina, for example. That goes way back, but he was a senator well up until the early 2000s when he was nearly 100 years old and had to be carried out in a wheelchair to Senate meetings and, you know, Senate votes. But, you know, he wasn't pushed to resign, and so a lot of people were saying, well, why are you pushing Feinstein to resign if you didn't get the same thing to old male senators who were ailing, you know, in the past? But not only has Senator Feinstein been condemned, although let me give my take on it, the whole accusations like, well, she should have retired in 2018. Well, if she retired in 2018, we would have had a senator by the name of Kevin DeLeon. He is a current L.A. city councilman, city councilman for the city of Los Angeles. And let's just say he's a bit of a racist. And there was a whole racism scandal that rocked the L.A. city council. It was a city few city council members, Muri Martinez and Kevin De Leon, for example, who essentially called racist things to basically every major ethnic group in Los Angeles under the sun. Like, it was unreal if you listen to the recording. So having a senator with that kind of baggage is probably better for Democrats in the long run. Although, you know, although the pace of Biden's judicial nominations being slowed down is obviously not good news to Democrats who watch the Senate closely. And another person that has been condemned in the face of all this situation is Senator Dick Durbin, who is the, I believe, the Senate Majority Whip for Democrats. He's a number three, if I remember correctly. Or number two Democrat, sorry. But he's a leading Democrat in the Senate, and he has been condemned for appointing Ms. Feinstein to the Judiciary Committee when she is in her late 80s. I mean, he's accused of being incompetent and sort of not having the foresight to understand when these things would happen. Do I think these things? In my own personal opinion, I mean, you heard the disclaimer, any opinions I say are not WVUA's. I think Dick Durbin's incompetent for this. I mean, if you are just playing power politics and trying to get your party judicial nominations through, your president's judicial nominations through, then I don't think it's smart politics to appoint people who are of ailing health and who are publicly known to be suffering from dementia, as Ms. Feinstein is. So having her on a very powerful Judiciary Committee, not exactly the smartest move. Also, Senator Dianne Feinstein had asked to be taken off the Judiciary Committee, but not any of her other committees. And this was used by Senate Republicans to block her appointment. Well, if she isn't being asked to be replaced on all these other committees that she's on, why is she asking to be put off the Judiciary Committee for a time while she recovers? To them, that seems like just a blatant partisan power grab. Which it kind of is, let's be completely honest with ourselves. But at the same time, I mean, it is a very deep blow for Democrats, not just on the judicial point part of view, but because of any potential investigations of Clarence Thomas. Dick Durbin said that the Supreme Court Chief Justice should lead an investigation on the situation. Well, the problem is for Dick Durbin, not only is he being condemned for not taking a leadership role within this whole situation, but now any investigations of Justice Thomas and the whole Harlan Crow situation I kind of delved into last week, and I believe it was last Friday's newsflash, if I remember correctly. Go watch that, of course, after this. But any investigation of that, that needs the consent of at least one GOP senator on the Senate Judiciary Committee. That is obviously not going to happen. So Dick Durbin has been, you know, widely condemned for that. And watch this space in 2026, whether you are a UA student still or going to be a UA alumnus. Watch this space. Senator Dick Durbin is likely going to be getting a primary challenger from his left during that time, because that's when he's next up. He was reelected in 2020 by a wide margin over Republican nominee, I believe it was Mark Curran. And Willie Wilson of the Willie Wilson Party ran and got good, decent numbers in majority black areas of Chicago. I detailed in the first episode Willie Wilson's very, very strange life and political career, but that's another story for another day. So while that has all been going on, President Joe Biden has been preparing to announce his own re-election bid in 2024. There were reports that there were debates within Biden's team on when to announce, but the consensus we have gotten today from a report in the Washington Post states that Joe Biden is set to announce on Tuesday, April 25th. It is the four-year anniversary of his 2019 presidential bid, in which he outlined his bid as being for the soul of the nation. And President Biden ultimately won the Democratic nomination and thus the presidential election. And now the mood is that he is going to be running for re-election. There are questions over whether, you know, potentially his health will allow him to. I mean, he is very, very old, even by presidential standards. And there are questions even within the Democratic Party on whether to run a nearly 80-year-old man as the forebearer of the Democratic Party, especially given the situation with Dianne Feinstein. But Joe Biden's going to go full steam ahead with his re-election bid. He is widely expected to win the Democratic nomination unless, you know, unless Joe Biden, for whatever reason, cannot run in the primary any longer, essentially incapacitation or death, which case it would be wildly expected that Vice President Kamala Harris would take his place on the ticket. But moving on from the presidential race to a House race that I've had my eyes on, because something very interesting has happened in Illinois' 7th Congressional District. It is a safe Democratic majority black district currently held by Representative Danny Davis. Danny Davis has not been raising that much money, and for people who watch, you know, fundraising things, a Congress member is raising like tens of thousands of dollars. That's a good indication that congressperson or senator is going to resign. And we have another indication that if Danny Davis doesn't resign, he will have a tough primary anyways, because Chicago City Treasurer Melissa Conyers Irvin has filed an exploratory committee in his seat. Now, does this mean that Danny Davis is going to retire anytime soon? I don't know, neither does anybody but Representative Danny Davis himself, probably. But something to keep your eyes on, potentially explosive primary that may happen in this Chicago-based district. Moving on now across the country to Antioch, California, reports that 45 officers, or nearly half Antioch's police department, in the which this is a city in the San Francisco Bay Area, I believe the third largest city in the Bay Area, or I could be completely wrong on that, but it is a decently large area, large city, over 100,000 people, but there are reports that nearly half the city's police department was involved in a chain of racist and homophobic texts, according to Contra Costa County's public defender, Ella McDowell. She says that at least 16 of these officers serve within leadership roles in the department, and she has called on the district attorney of Contra Costa County to drop all pending PD cases involving Antioch police, release the incarcerated clients in question, and cease filing any police-related cases. Now, the police chief of Antioch, California, has apologized and promised a thorough investigation of the matter. Moving on now to more national news, Dominion Voting Systems has gotten a nearly $800 million settlement with Fox News in a defamation suit, where Fox News was accused of defaming Dominion Voting Systems, given the whole, you know, Dominion was rigging elections for Joe Biden claim. Well, simply put, Fox News anchors like Tucker Carlson were going on air. They were accusing Dominion Voting Systems of, you know, either not being, you know, secure voting systems, or accusing Dominion Voting Systems of even outright rigging election results against then-President Donald Trump in favor of current President Joe Biden. Fox News had to admit that in a statement that these statements were not true, as, you know, these statements, of course, are not true. But what was interesting about this case is that a trial jury had been selected, and the lawyers for Dominion and Fox had already prepared their opening statement. So this was something completely last minute, and something that disappointed a lot of left-leaning people and liberals who have been following the case, who had wanted this to go to trial. And maybe they'll get their wish, considering that Smartmatic, another voting systems company, still has its suit against Fox News coming up. But this is something to watch, of course, over the coming months and years as we head towards another presidential election cycle and people get geared up for this whole situation as well. Moving on to Texas now, and we may have a potential general election opponent for Senator Ted Cruz, a personally unpopular Republican incumbent from Texas. And when I say personally unpopular, I mean that nobody in the Senate likes him. I believe Lindsey Graham has said in the past, you know, something to that extent. He will be getting a general election challenge, at least from State Senator Roland Gutierrez, a Democrat who represents areas from the Senate. Antonio suburbs to, you know, areas west, includes border areas, includes the city of Uvalde, for example. He is, quote, nearly certain to challenge Cruz, according to reports from Wednesday, and that same report indicates that Mr. Gutierrez would have a different strategy to candidates of the past, especially in comparison to Beto O'Rourke, a former candidate for Senate against Ted Cruz in 2018 and who ran against Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, in 2022. Beto O'Rourke made it a point to visit all 254 counties of Texas in order to court more rural voters. Meanwhile, Roland Gutierrez would be expected to focus on the 30 largest counties in Texas in order to increase base turnout. Who knows if that's going to get anywhere, or if Mr. Gutierrez is even going to win a primary challenge, considering that it has been widely rumored that U.S. House Representative Colin Allred from the Dallas-Fort Worth area may also be looking to run as a Democrat in that Senate race against Ted Cruz as well. We'll see where that goes. Currently, Mr. Cruz is a favorite to win re-election, although given Texas' recent swing to the left over the past decade, Cruz's re-election is not certain, even though he is still favored to win re-election. Now, moving on to the Supreme Court, and a stay by Justice Samuel Alito has allowed for mifepristone, an abortion pill that is meant for the first 10 weeks of pregnancy, to remain on the market until Friday. It was a stay of Judge Matthew Kaczmarek's ruling that suspended the FDA's approval of the abortion pill. And when the Supreme Court decides to rule on this whole fiasco, because there was Kaczmarek's ruling, and then a couple, like an hour later, there was a conflicting ruling that allowed for mifepristone to remain on the market in certain states, we'll see where that goes, and I'll analyze the impacts of the Supreme Court's ruling, whatever it may be, in the next few episodes. So just go ahead and watch out for that. Moving on to Atlanta now and the controversies involving Cop City, a proposed multi-million dollar complex which would allow for Atlanta police and other police to train themselves in regards to protests and street situations and tactics to do to deal with the protests. And this goes back a few months because there was a protester by the name of Manuel Terran, otherwise known as Tortuguita, who was killed by Georgia State Police. I believe this was in January. Now, Georgia State Police, Georgia Bureau of Investigation, alleged that Terran, who goes by they-them pronouns, had a gun on them. And they released a photo of this supposed gun. This was highly questioned by anti-Cop City activists and those on the left immediately, who thought that, you know, there was essentially a gun planted on Terran in order to justify, you know, Terran's death. And the DeKalb County Medical Examiner tends to agree with this statement, as in an autopsy released on Wednesday, the death was ruled as a homicide. There were 57 bullet wounds to Terran's torso, arm, and head areas. And this gives a lot of fuel to these anti-Cop City activists, whether they be from an environmental perspective or whether they come from sort of a pro-defund the police perspective. And so now there are accusations that, you know, one of the cops there shot a friendly fire, essentially. And that was used as the justification to essentially start blasting. Moving on to Michigan now, and Pamela Pugh, the president of the Michigan State Board of Education, says she's, quote, almost there running for Senate in a Twitter post on Wednesday. This is important because this would provide a primary challenge to Representative Alyssa Slotkin, a more moderate Democrat who announced her campaign for the Senate, I believe, around a month ago. This Senate seat is an open seat being vacated by current incumbent Senator Debbie Stabenow, a fellow Democrat. And there was a lot of concern from progressives and people on the left that Representative Slotkin would essentially be another Kyrsten Sinema. Kyrsten Sinema is a former Democratic, now independent senator for Arizona, who always seemed to be a thorn in the side of President Biden's first 2 years in office, whether regarding the Inflation Reduction Act or, you know, the other, you know, the bipartisan, well, she was a champion of the bipartisan infrastructure law, but the more social spending, you know, package that was included as a part of that, Senator Sinema helped kill that. So progressives don't exactly like her that much, and I don't think any Democrat likes her that much now that she is, you know, she left the party and transitioned to being an independent, even though she still caucuses with the Democrats. So I could get into a whole other discussion about Senator Sinema potentially running for re-election as an independent, even though Representative Ruben Gallego is already running for the Democratic nomination for that Arizona Senate seat. And as for the Republicans, they are likely getting ready to nominate, you know, former gubernatorial nominee Kari Lake. So it's a potential three-way situation that could happen there in that that Senate election in 2024. Moving to Illinois now, Representative Eric Sorensen landed himself in hot water recently for a vote against, you know, police reform in D.C. Now, for those who are wondering, why would Congress vote on matters of D.C.? Congress has jurisdiction over D.C. because D.C. is not a state. It's a state capital. It's a city. Essentially, sort of a federal territory, almost. It's a weird legal situation for D.C. to find itself in, but Congress has jurisdiction over it. People will remember, you know, Joe Biden a couple weeks ago vetoed parts of D.C.'s criminal code or repealed parts of D.C.'s criminal code. And, you know, Sorensen has laid himself in hot water for voting to repeal some D.C. police reforms, voting to repeal the ban on chokeholds, for example. And his reasoning was because this was a messaging bill, he could vote yes, and the GOP could not use this against him. This has likely earned himself a primary challenger from the left because vast majority of Americans do not approve of chokeholds being used by police. And Representative Sorensen watched this space because that could be a decently brutal primary in a Biden by 8 or so district in Western Illinois. It was created as part of the Democratic gerrymander of Illinois' congressional map in order to give, I believe, a 14-3, you know, split in the congressional maps, even though Illinois is more of a 60-40 state. Moving on to events that happened on Thursday, and Representative Scotty Campbell, the vice chair of the Tennessee House GOP caucus, who is from Mountain City, he has resigned after an ethics subcommittee found him guilty of sexually harassing one or two of his interns. And this comes in the wake of the Tennessee 3 situation, which I painted a picture of on a recent episode last week, so go ahead and check that out. The episode title is, of course, The Tennessee 3. Now, the RNC has also landed itself in hot water this past week after a top GOP lawyer by the name of Cleta Mitchell pushed for restrictions of on-campus voting, automatic mailing of ballots, and same-day voter registration at a donor retreat in Nashville this past week in a presentation that Ms. Mitchell had given to the RNC. This has landed further accusations of Republicans trying to suppress the student vote, especially because at most colleges and universities, including here at the University of Alabama, the student vote leans more towards the Democrats. At UA's campus, at the UA Rec Center precinct, Joe Biden won that precinct by around 18 to 19 points, even though it was a Trump won district in 2016. It was still won by Joe Biden in 2020, and the same thing with the Tuscaloosa Courthouse precinct to the west of the Rec Center. That is also a high student population and flipped from Trump to Biden in 2020. And this is only exacerbated at schools across the nation, UCLA, Brown, Harvard, take your pick of any university that's not Auburn, whose student precinct voted for Trump by around 10 points. But this is laying to further accusations of, you know, that sort of thing. And this is also relevant in the context of what Texas did last year, because they closed a lot of on-campus polling sites and moved others to outside of campus. So you have that situation going on as well. Finally, we will end with two things. You know, first off with Kaczmarek, as we refer to the mifepristone abortion pill warning that he gave. Apparently today, there was reporting from CNN which stated that he, in a 2014 interview with Christian Talk Radio, he outlined anti-gay, anti-contraception, anti-no-fault divorce opinions of his. And this is, of course, back 9 years ago. You know, and of course, those opinions are definitely not as popular amongst the public now. And this has landed him accusations of being a Christian nationalist. And this is, of course, landing that ruling in further condemnation from the left, if there wasn't already enough condemnation from the left as is. Finally, a last story takes us back to Chicago. We covered Illinois 7th Congressional District, but now let's cover the whole city of Chicago, because there are accusations that Chicago police are engaged in a wildcat strike over the election of Brandon Johnson as mayor. A wildcat strike is essentially, you know, an unapproved or unauthorized strike where they just essentially either refuse to work or decide that you're not going to work as hard as your job. And those accusations come in the events of you know, essentially mob violence that happened downtown against two very young people. And those two young people thought they were going to die. You know, one of them took more of the brunt than others. The man took the brunt more than the woman did. But, you know, the mob said, you know, quote, we're going to kill you. So obviously imagine how you feel in that situation. Now, the two had noticed that, you know, the police were simply standing there and not really helping the situation. When they went to a police station after the incident to report it, they were told by the desk sergeant, essentially, because Brandon Johnson is mayor-elect, he's going to be the mayor, this violence is going to happen. This has been interpreted by, you know, the left in Chicago as essentially the Chicago Police Department, quote, is going to allow violence to foment as retaliation for Brandon Johnson being elected mayor in order to manufacture consent for, you know, more deregulation of the police and more funding of the police, which their preferred candidate, Paul Vallis, wanted to do. If you want to know more about the Chicago mayoral election, it's the second half of the first episode in which I detail everything that happened there. I can't confirm, obviously I'm not from Chicago at all, I'm from Alabama, so I can't confirm or deny whether, you know, there is actually a wildcat strike or anything related to it, but if true, it definitely spells troubling times, especially when combined with the reports out of Atlanta regarding Cop City. But that ends the first episode of Bolts of the Nation that we're going to do this week. That ends episode 5. Thank y'all for listening. Episode 6 details basically everything that has happened in McCurtain County over the past week. You will not want to miss it. It is one of the wildest stories that you will hear this year. Thank you and have a great day.
Any opinions expressed in this program are those of the host and do not represent the thoughts or opinions of 90.7 WVUA or the University of Alabama.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.